women from the poorest household show a pattern of stark social isolation and would basically describe situation where, like other beneficiaries, they would buy some assets, some livestock, chicken, and invest like others. But after a few weeks, a few months, a shock would hit, a health shock, for example, one of the kids would get sick, and they would have no one to turn to for help.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Public works programs, well, you might know them as workfare, are used in many fragile, conflict-affected countries to offer safety nets to poor and vulnerable households. But how large is their impact? Do men and women benefit equally? And do they have a social benefit that goes beyond income? Arthur Alic Lagrange of the World Bank evaluated the impact of one large program in the Central African Republic, and he joins me now from Nigeria, I believe. Arthur, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Tell me about the Central African Republic. It sounds like a very challenging environment for this type of program. What are the statistics on the things that I mentioned at the beginning? Poverty, gender differences, violence?
CAR is an extremely challenging country. In fact, it's among the poorest countries in the world. Depending on the measure you choose, you often end up being in the 10 poorest countries in the world. In terms of monetary poverty, it's between 6 and 7. People in Central African Republics are considered poor, depending on the poverty line you consider. Maternal mortality is among the highest in the world. The development index is among the lowest in the world. And when I say lowest, it's 3, 5, 10 poorest countries in the world. On any of these measures, you end up in the bottom part of the distribution. It's the same in terms of schooling. The lowest schooling in the world, survival before 5 years old. And the violence is extreme. There has been a recurrent violent crisis, outbreak of violence in CAR. According to IOM, you have about 500,000 people displaced, depending on when you look at the numbers during the years. It's extremely volatile. So the outbreak of violence come back and forth every few months. And it's extremely challenging, as you said.
Why are the problems so deep in CAR?
Well, it's a nexus, so it's extremely difficult to describe it in terms of causality, where it's actually coming from. But if you look at the nexus, you see first a dramatic lack of social cohesion. We like to describe it as a broken social contract, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Government doesn't control the entirety of the territory, or not always. There is concentration of political power, but it's highly contested, and a massive social and regional disparity in the way the country is developed. Capture and mismanagement of natural resources. You might know that it's a country with great natural resources in terms of diamond and other mineral resources.
Mm.
What is also striking, it's a country where you do have water, where green coverage is good. We are in Central Africa. So it's not a matter of access to water, for example, that would actually be the case in countries up north. But it's a matter of governance primarily.
So today we're talking about the impact of a public works program. For people who are unfamiliar with them, what is the principle of workfare?
So workfare, in a sense, is the cash transfer. It's a social protection scheme where you would like to give, as a planner, you would like to give some benefits, some social protection benefit to poor people. And the challenge that happens very often is that you don't know who is poor and who is non-poor.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, in a country where you have no administrative information on income, for example, you start with a base where you don't know who is poor and who is not. You sometimes have some poverty map and some sense of the type of people you would like to target, but you don't have much information. And one way to reveal who is poor and who is not poor is to impose a work requirement at a very low wage rate. So basically, you assume that poor people have low wage rate in any activity they do, low productivity, and less poor people have a higher productivity. So when you impose a work requirement at a low wage rate, only those who are actually poor will be interested in participating in the program. So in economics, we would call it an optimal screening mechanism where there is an asymmetric information between a planner and the population. And the population will actually reveal who is poor and who is not by accepting to work on a low paid job. It's not a new policy. That's something that has existed in many countries. can think of the workhouses in the UK, for example. And when you do that, you actually have some cost that comes in compared to the option where you would know who is poor and who is not and give cash transfers only to those you consider as being poor. And the costs are typically implementation costs. Think of the workhouse, for example. You need an administration. You need a building. If you think of public works in the way they are done in sub-Saharan Africa or in India, you need tools. You need to register people. You need some monitoring and administration of the public works. But there are also hidden costs. One is foregone earnings. The fact that you hope your program to screen out those who have some higher earnings on the private labor market means that those who will be participating are losing money participating. They would be making some earnings or some other jobs if they would not be participating in the program. So in a way, you impose to participants a tax to reveal themselves as being poor that you have to compensate for. So there is some loss. And then you have another loss that is a welfare loss. And that is the fact that very often people would be working more through the program that they would be working in the absence of the program. And so these are costs that comes in. And then the entire trade-off is between how much more targeting you get through this program compared to a cash transfer where you would actually miss some of the poor and these costs that have been mentioned.
So in theory, in this context, in this country, why might workfare be a good idea? And also in theory, why might it not be a good idea?
Obviously, the point I was making about the lack of any administrative information on who is poor and who is non-poor, it applies very much. But there are possibly extra benefits beyond the targeting argument I have mentioned. One hope implementing this public works in a context like this is that you actually trigger some second round effect that are less related to the immediate economic benefits. One is the hope that you would create a sense of community and collective action in the communities where you are implementing the program. You hope that coming in a fresh post-conflict context, bringing together people and work together and participate together in improving some local infrastructure would create a sense of a stronger community and possibly increase social cohesion. Another aspect is that you might hope that this program would increase the quality of infrastructures. And my sense as a weak argument in modern time when you have machines, engineers, like the best way to build a road is probably not a labor intense, low tech solution. But in a context like this one, actually you don't really have access to machines and engineers. And what we've seen in Londo is that the infrastructure being improved by the program have a positive impact. That is something we might not see in other contexts, but in a context where really there is a lack of access to machines, public engineering, and so on, this program might be a game changer in some communities in terms of improving infrastructures.
So first of all, Artur, describe this program that you have evaluated. What was it? What were its goals?
So the program we've evaluated in CAR is called Londo. In Sango, it means stand up. And the name is telling on the objective of the program. So the program is implemented in all sous-prefectures of CAR since 2015. And the core objective of the program was to provide to the most vulnerable in the population the means to escape extreme poverty, improve public infrastructure and rebuild social cohesion. So to achieve this objective, the program offers short-term employment opportunities to laborers who would come on work sites, and they would come on work sites with bicycles, actually. The program offers bicycles to beneficiary, and that is partly motivated by the situation where the work sites could not be implemented in remote places, but rather in central part of the sous-prefecture, and to augment the chance that people would come from other parts of the sous-prefecture that only the urban central part, beneficiaries would receive bicycles. And the type of work they would do would be to repair rural roads, dirt roads, digging ditches, clearing landing stripes for the humanitarian aid flights. And the program would have one particularity compared to other public works programs is that the selection would go through lotteries, big public lotteries. So typically people would register on a day one with some cap of 1,500 participants to the lottery. And on the second day, there would be a public draw of 500 beneficiaries in the community. That's very specific to this public works program as a way to address oversubscription. And the program would last for about 2 months in a given community. And the way the work would happen then is that beneficiaries of the program would be spread across working squads of 25 workers. And these 25 workers would be selected at random among the pool of beneficiaries and work all together daily on the work sites. On the work sites, there would be some code of conduct with explicitly banning hostile or violent behavior, arriving on time at the work sites.
We've covered a couple of public works programs before on Vox Dev Talk, specifically NREGA in India. Is this similar in structure to existing programs? It sounds like this lottery is an unusual aspect.
So the lottery is highly unusual. I've seen this in Colombia, mm-hmm. One other example. There has been other example. I believe Côte d'Ivoire had a case of lottery. And DRC, Eastern DRC, mm-hmm. We've seen lotteries applied for the selection of public works beneficiaries. And actually, that's an interesting feature of the program. You know, we always wonder about how to target and how to select the poorest of the poor. Mm-hmm. In a context of very high poverty rate and homogeneity in poverty, this lottery seems to make a lot of sense, including the governance aspect and the political economy aspect, recognizing that these populations are extremely poor and somewhat homogeneously poor. Doing a lottery and doing it publicly with a very strict protocol might be a way to address the challenges related to fragility. At least in CAR, we've seen it's a success. And in DRC, I've also been following what is happening in Eastern DRC on the public works. It's also a success there.
It sounds like this lottery as well is useful when you come to evaluate the program, because I guess it means that the people that took part in the program were likely to be similar to the people who did not.
Exactly. I think a challenge in measuring the impact of workfare program in the world has been non-comparability between a beneficiary and non-beneficiary. I wrote my PhD on public works, and back then, mm-hmm. about 10 years ago, the diagnosis on the literature was that there is very little evidence compared to other type of public of social protection program mm-hmm. when it comes to public works. And I've been wondering about why, actually. It does seem that public works have in their design, in the nature of this program, something that makes them harder to evaluate through random control trials, harder to experiment with random assignments. And I think there is research to be done on understanding why, actually. And the fact that people take up, depending on their labor supply and what activity they have on the private labor market, makes it very challenging. The reason why people would decide to work on a work site or not are extremely difficult to model. Mm-hmm. The empirics of modeling labor supply in this context is very, very difficult. And so getting at estimates on impacts gets challenging in terms of comparing populations, deciding to participate or not. But here, as you said, we use basically a natural experiment design where we have a program allocating beneficiaries at random. And we use the lottery list as our sampling universe and select winners and non-winners at the lotteries to build our treatment and control groups.
So given these treatment and control groups gives you the opportunity to evaluate the impact of the program, what are you evaluating and how long after the program are you evaluating it?
We came to about 12 sous-préfectures where the program had been implemented between 2 and 18 months before the survey. The survey was administered after the implementation of the program. It was a very short survey, about 1 hour, and the focus of the survey was to look at impact on economic outcome. What type of economic activities do people have, sense of their earnings on these activities, measuring their expenditures, assets. But then also we looked in mobility outcome, considering that the program gives bicycles. Mm-hmm. Without having this being the core focus of the impact evaluation, we thought it's important to look at mobility outcome, as the program might have had this second round effect on mobility. And then there's a set of outcomes that relate to social cohesion and social contract outcome. Now, on this last set, this is where the impact evaluation design was less geared at getting at impact, because Our impact evaluation will look at the impact within communities. Mm-hmm. So in a community, we would look at the difference between participant and non-participant. And we don't have communities in our sample where there was no program. So we cannot compare between communities, and we expect social cohesion outcome to actually move for the entire community. So the impact evaluation on that front was less geared toward the identification of the impact.
So first of all, to the most immediate economic impact, did the beneficiaries from the program have more money and more work afterwards?
Yes, that is the short answer. In terms of work, it's less clear, actually. What we're seeing in our sample is that people work a lot. Beyond this program, you don't have much social insurance and safety net. You need to work. There is no unemployment benefits. There is no other option, basically. And our sample is basically working full time all the time. Mm-hmm. So in terms of how many more days people work, we do see slightly an increase, about half a day. And that's significant in the statistical analysis. But this half a day compared to an average of 22 days of work in the past 30 days. So we see a marginal increase in how much people work. And when it comes to a paid labor, we actually don't see much impact. The base is extremely low in terms of wage labor, paid labor. But what we're seeing is actually an increase in productivity. Like people, all of this basically same amount of work are making more income. And it's about slightly less than a 10% increase in individual earnings on their economic activity. That we see coming through a diversification of the economic activity, specifically for women. Women would actually start to do some petty trade. So typically would start to go trade at the market and would actually have this as a secondary activity. So an increase in the number of economic activities. And for the male participants, for the men, what we're seeing is an increase in the ag productivity. So the impact is strongly gendered. We both see for male and female participants this increase in earnings, increase in productivity, but that goes through two different channels. For the men, it's mostly about being more productive in their ag activity. We do see some of them starting some manufacturing and increase activities that are not ag, but it's mostly about being more productive on the ag activity. And for female participants, it's mostly about starting or doing more petty trade activities.
And you mentioned before that it's a very precarious existence for households. Does this make them more resilient?
The resilience is often challenging to measure, but we did look at how much asset people have first. That's first sense of how much buffer they have if they would face a shock. And there we do see that even that many months after the intervention, on average, they would have quite more assets than the non-participants to the program. And when we also ask question about whether they would be in a position to gather some sum, we ask about some specific sum, we do see them more often able to gather the sum in the event of an emergency. We also ask household whether they had to take a debt in the past 6 months to buy food, to pay for schooling or health. These are signals of a lack of resilience in a sense. And we do see that those who are participants in the program compared to the non-participants significantly less often use debt to pay for food, pay for health. So indeed a sense that the resilience has improved among participants.
Okay, so we mentioned that the outcomes were very different for men and for women. Do we know why this is?
I think it's a very interesting part of our research project. I've mentioned the difference in impact between men and women in terms of the channel through which productivity is improved, being ag for male and more petty trade for female participants. But there's another difference between men and women in impact, mm-hmm. is the distributional impact. We've looked at the impact of the program along the distribution in assets before the program. We had some recall module in the survey that helped us understand where participants were before the program in the wealth distribution among all the participants. And what we see is that male participants do see a positive impact of the program, whether they are in the poorest part of the distribution or in the highest part of the distribution. So there is not much distributional gradient in the impact for male participants. Mm-hmm. When it comes to female participants, women, what we're seeing is that women from the upper part of the wealth distribution see lasting benefits of the program. But when it comes to the poorest women in the distribution, the impact seems to vanish. You would not see much difference in terms of asset, for example, between participants and non-participants when you focus on this group of participants who are women in the poorest household in the sample. Mm. And that was really striking when we looked at the results and we wondered what is happening specifically for these women that makes them not able to leverage the benefit of the program in a lasting way like other beneficiaries of the program. There might be some poverty trap happening where for this group, apparently, the push of the program did not help them escape in a lasting way. I say lasting ways, we are between 2 and 18 months after the program, so I don't want to make it too much of a long-term impact. But still, that was a very interesting aspect that we decided to explore in a systematic qualitative study. This qualitative study was led by a researcher, Millie Lake, from the London School of Economics, and together with a World Bank colleague, Rachel Pierotti. What we discovered looking at the specific group of participants compared to other group of participants is that women from the poorest household show a pattern of stark social isolation, you see, and would basically describe situation where, like other beneficiaries, they would buy some assets, some livestock, chicken, and invest like others. But after a few weeks, a few months, a shock would hit. A health shock, for example, one of the kids would get sick, and they would have no one to turn to for help. They would also not access the informal credit market. They would describe themselves as not credit worthy in the eyes of other members of the community. They would be in household where there would be no other adult members, or the other adult members in the household would have no income generating activity to support. And so typically they would have to sell whatever they invested in thanks to the program and would get back to the situation where they were before the program. The sentence I would hear in the qualitative interviews would be that they have no memory of the program and that they had no one to turn to, no one to help. And that we found thanks to this qualitative work, understanding the situation. It might sound very specific to say, I think there is something general about it that applies to many war conflict contexts and that makes this group very specific. Many of them are widows as well and not the typical profile of a widow that you would see in sub-Saharan Africa where it's an older woman, for example, but very often young women who are widows or who actually don't know the whereabouts of their husband because of the conflict. And would find themselves totally isolated and would benefit during the program. It's not saying that the program is not benefiting, like while they are on the program and right after, they might have some real increase in their welfare. But very soon, the first shocks would hit and they would actually go back to where they were before the program.
These are very interesting results. Do they tell us anything about how to design public works program?
Yes. So I think the results overall show that this program actually had a very positive impact and for most of the beneficiary. But what it reveals for the poorest women and what the qualitative work that we've done companion to the paper we are discussing today suggests that it would be highly beneficial for this program to have for the poorest women, women from the poorest household, some accompanying measure that would specifically address this issue of social isolation for poorest women. And I think it's something that is relevant for public works, but altogether for programs that try to alleviate population in fragile settings out of poverty. This gender lens specifically for those women who are socially isolated, who are widows, or women who have lost their parents, who would benefit from this program, should also benefit from some accompanying measure to try and break the social isolation effect that is so typical for this group of women in conflict settings.
Now, you did mention that you were looking into the impact on social cohesion in general as well. Did you get any results on that?
We did ask various questions on social cohesion and social contract outcome, by which I mean we asked, would you be comfortable having as a neighbor someone from another ethnic group, being the same family? Would you let your kids play together? So that's more on social cohesion. And then on social contract, how much interaction respondents have with authorities? Do they recognize the authority of the government, the police, and so on? And what we're seeing within these communities is actually very high level of social cohesion, both among participants and non-participants. So the difference between the two is not significant. And we can read this in two ways. One way to read it is that the program did not increase social cohesion because social cohesion to start with was extremely high, which makes sense in a fresh post-conflict setting. Like you come in communities right after a conflict, there might have been a lot of sorting happening, and you are in a community where people are sorted into a group that is highly cohesive. Another way to read it is that the program has improved social cohesion dramatically in this community. And because social cohesion is an outcome that probably move across all the members of the community, there are spillovers happening and the non-beneficiaries are actually also more socially cohesive. And the entire community is extremely socially cohesive thanks to the program. But the design of the impact evaluation doesn't allow you to distinguish between these two ways of reading the outcome.
One of the common objections to Workfare is it's pretty expensive as an intervention. Does what you found here strengthen the case for public works programs in general?
In a context where things look almost impossible to implement, when you do see one intervention working, it makes the case that this intervention can be successful in this extremely challenging setting. What we find here is that a public work can be a valid option in a context that is that challenging. This being said, there is not much of a benchmark in this context. So I would not say that the public works option looks stronger than another one in this context, but it's a proof that it validates it's possible to do this type of intervention in such a challenging context where almost everything seems impossible to implement. That case is actually very important. On the discussion between public works and cash transfers and related to the discussion we had on lotteries, I think there is a real question on this lottery, whether these lotteries could actually be used on cash transfer as well. On public works, they appear to be a valid approach. Here in CAR, the examples I've given in DRC are also showing good success. But whether you could do a cash transfer using this lottery approach to targeting is an open question. The local political economy makes it very specific. And the fact that you, after this lottery, you ask beneficiary to spend time working on infrastructure that would benefit everyone in the community help, I believe, the feasibility of the program. I'm not sure just giving a cash transfer in this context would be sustainable in terms of backlash that you could have from non-beneficiary, for example, in the same community. Here, there is a sense that you've been selected publicly through lottery, so it's just by luck that you are a beneficiary. And on top, when you benefit, well, you actually have to work on these work sites, and it's not an easy work that you do. So there is also a sense of you earn the benefits that you are receiving. And so non-beneficiary might backlash less in this community.
Arturo, you've been studying public works programs your entire career. From what you've learned, are there lessons for policymakers here about things that they should definitely try to do and mistakes that they should definitely try to avoid?
So I think the most important message is that there is no silver bullet. There is no social protection program option that would beat all others. It really depends on the context. I think we need to think of the social protection options being workfare, cash transfer, and the way to target being a lottery, a proximity test, and so on as tools to use depending on the specific needs and the specific context. These fragile settings are always very specific, so it's always very important to consider the constraints that are impeding the program implementation, with always the first objective to not harm. That is obvious. Now, the things I believe one should pay attention when choosing the right tool that I believe are extremely important and they are related. First is to have a clear rationale. It's very important that the selection of the specific social protection intervention and the specificity of the design are anchored to gains and losses according to some very clear objectives. And that is very important because you want the motivation for the specificities of the design to be understood down to the communities by local leaders, participants, and non-participants. When the design is too complex, when it doesn't anchor really well on a clear rationale, it gets very complex to actually explain and to get the buy-in from local leaders and communities where you will be implementing. And in a fragile setting like this, things get extremely complex if things are not understood by everyone. So that is one point that is extremely important and related to this. And you want to be able to monitor what you're doing and the impact of the interventions, as well with the importance of not harming and understanding what are the potential effects of the program, have some solid grievance mechanism in place that people are able to express discontent and ask questions and get answers to their question. So solid monitoring system and grievance mechanisms are extremely important in such context, being for public works or cash transfer or any other type of intervention.
Some very important insights. Thank you for talking about them today.
Thank you, Tim.
If you want to read about this, the paper is called Welfare Impacts of Public Works in Fragile and Conflict-Affected Economies, the Londol Public Works in the Central African Republic. It is published in Labour Economics, number 81. Authors Arthur Alic Lagrange, Nicolas Buren, Marcus Goldstein and Johannes Hoogeven. Or if you want to read a shorter version, on the World Bank's website you can find an article called Can Public Works Enhance Welfare in Fragile Economies? This has been a Vox Dev Talk. And the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find us there. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you'll also find articles about the papers we feature.